am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
And here we are again on Monday, June 24th, walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling our own destiny. Hi, everybody. This is Jan Revelle, and you are on Purpose Talk Radio. And today we have two wonderful guests. I keep getting a little confused because both of their names begin with K-A. So we have Kathy Shiren and Karen Russo with us today, and I'm very excited. Remember, this is the third in a 13-week series of Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers. These are contemporary women spiritual leaders. They've been working in the spiritual realm for, well, we can say decades now. Isn't that something? Did you ever think you'd get to the point where you could say that you've done something for decades? And now we all have. Well, all of us who are on this show today, in any case. So I want to just remind you that our theme song is called I Am Who I Am, and it's by the group True Trinity. You can find True Trinity at truetrinity.com, where you can listen to the song, you can purchase the song and download it, and you can find other music that they have done as well. Cindy Freeman is our facilitator on this show, and she's one of the members of True Trinity. So make sure you go check it out. Listen to them. And speaking of Cindy Freeman, I guess I need to tell you right quickly here. Next week, Cindy Freeman is the guest on the show because she is instituting a brand new global holiday called Positive News Day. Actually, it's going to be Positive News Month, but we're going to have a Positive News Day show next week. So we'll tell more about that in a little bit. Okay. So I need to tell you, I forgot my cheat sheet again, so I'm going to wing it here. I need to tell you how to contact me. You can do that at jan@purposetalkradio.com. When you go to purposetalkradio.com, you can also find a little button there to donate, if you would like to donate to help the expenses of the show. And you can also sponsor a show or become a sponsor. And as a sponsor, you get this wonderful opportunity to be named at the beginning and the ending of every show. You get on the website. You get on our Blog Talk Radio little blurb. And you also get on our Facebook page. All this kind of wonderful exposure that you get for a very minimal price. So if you want information about that, contact me, jan@purposetalkradio.com. Today, Kathy has drawn a card, actually a couple of cards, to go with our card reading segment of the show. So I'm going to bring Kathy in and have her do her card reading first because it's really quite powerful. Hey, Kathy, how you doing?
Hey, Jan. I'm doing great. Thanks. Very excited to be on the program today.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here too, both of you. So go ahead and do the card reading that you did for the show today.
Thanks. I drew three cards. Standard three-card draw when I'm looking for what to focus on or what to guide me in something. And they were amazing. The first one was called The Four of Rainbows, which is about the physical. And the name of the card is The Miser. And the picture on this card is a woman who has created a fortress around herself and is clinging to all these possessions that she thinks are her treasures. And the card essentially is challenging us to look at what we're clinging to. What we feel we possess that's so valuable that it needs to be protected by a fortress. And we might be trying to protect a bank balance or jewels or even our time or taking a risk about expressing our love to somebody. So if we hang on to our treasures, they become kind of tarnished and worthless if we refuse to share them. So the message of the card is to loosen your grip and feel the freedom and the expansiveness that sharing can bring. The second card, Major Arcana, was the Tower or the Thunderbolt. It's all about breaking down old structures, that fortress that actually showed up in the first card. so that we can be open to allowing what we need to receive to come to us, and so that we're open to allow that flowing through us to others. And the third card was also an emotions card, the Nine of Water, about complacency. And it says that even if we think we've achieved something, to not get caught up in sitting around in our pink fuzzy slippers, sipping on our pina coladas, which is all and good for a little while, but that we really need to keep moving in our process, that anything that we think is stable, we get back into that structure and that the thunderbolt is going to come again. And so no matter how much we like our fuzzy slippers or our tasty pina coladas, that there are skies upon skies still waiting to be explored.
That's awesome. What great messages, and they all just flow together. Well, the card that I drew is one that we have had on this show multiple times, and it was kind of interesting because it was sort of buried under some other cards, and I would close my eyes from looking, and my fingers just kept going searching for this particular card. And here it is. This is the card, The Big Friend. And The Big Friend shows this very fierce-looking dragon with an eye that almost looks like it's spinning. And the dragon is, well, if I looked at that dragon, I would be terrified. But inside the dragon's mouth, and it's got these huge teeth that are big enough that it can't really close its mouth completely. And inside of the mouth, lying very peacefully, is a young maiden. Her hair is hanging over the edge of the bottom edge of the dragon's lip, and she is just laying there very, very comfortable and safe and secure. So this is different than the fortress. When you are ready to break down that fortress and you're ready to loosen up and become free, it's very, very scary. And facing the world is terrifying, and especially when you are letting go of a sense of a need to control and allowing spirit to become more predominant in your life. That is so frightening, and it is very much like this dragon. So it's important for us to remember that the dragon is really our friend. And the dragon oftentimes will also equivalent to our ego, because our ego can sometimes act like a dragon. But when we make our ego our ally, then that ally becomes a protector for us and becomes someone who will not only take care of us, but not, again, not be with the fortress, but help keep us on the right track. I've said this before, that I've made my ego my ally, and one of the jobs that it has is helping me to stay on track on my spiritual path and my spiritual growth. So when I start going off track, I know that I'm going to kick butt from my ego that says, hey, you're not paying attention. Get back on the path. So we have wonderful cards today. And Kathy, if you would be willing to post that in the Purpose Talk Radio conversations, that would be wonderful, so people can read that.
Sure.
That would be just great. All right. Awesome. Well, I'm going to go ahead and we're going to jump right in and bring Karen in here today. Hi, Karen.
Wonderful.
How are you today?
Yes. I'm just great. Thank you so much, Jan, for being here. Thank you, Kathy, for facilitating us. And thank you. I also appreciated hearing the cards. I think there's some juicy stuff in that that'll be in our conversation. So thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, what I'd like to start with, and I do this with everybody, just so you know, is to ask you both. Cindy just sent me a message, by the way. She's our moderator, facilitator, and she's all put my name on those cards. So we have one person who definitely relates to all those cards. That's great. Okay, so we're going to start out. I'm going to ask each of you to tell us a little bit about who you are, where you came from, kind of a, not a timeline really, but how you got to where you are today, how you discovered this as a, where you are as a passion, and what your passion is. So I don't know which one of you would like to start. Do you want to jump in, or do you want me to say somebody's name? Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and start. So, Kathy, why don't you go ahead? Oh, before you start, I just got a reminder to our listeners. Make sure you go over to Facebook, and look for the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group. And if you're not already a member of the group, just request to join, and Cindy will get you in there, and that's where we conversations go on. During the show, people reiterate things that they really liked when they heard it. They talk about what's going on and also following the show. So, Kathy, how about if you start?
Okay. Gosh, I think I've been doing my passion ever since I ended up, since probably first grade is the earliest point where I remember doing it, but not really understanding that it was my passion. You know how things just tend to be easy for you? And so you think, well, because it's easy for me, I can do it. And that's sort of been the theme all along. So it really wasn't until probably less than 10 years ago where I understood that that was a consistent theme throughout my whole life, was helping people who are stuck, basically. In first grade, it showed up with literally teaching, you know, when we were doing our math homework, you know, 1 + 3 = 4 kind of thing. If the teacher didn't have time to explain or somebody wasn't getting it, I would help my fellow students figure it out. And not by giving them the answer, but literally somehow I had the gift of being able to communicate things in a way that all of a sudden clarity happened. I used to call it seeing the light go on in someone's eyes when they were moving out of a stuck and frustrated position. And it's
Boy, I could have used you when I was in elementary school.
Well, a lot of kids did. But my companies used it when I was in corporate. It was, they had problems and they would throw them at me and say, we don't know how that this is going to work out, but we know if we put you on it, you will figure it out. And that was always true. It was almost like my gift turns on and fires up when I'm in a place of stuckness in service to what that stuckness is and that person or that company that really wants to get back into flow and into positive flow, into service, into achieving their hopes and dreams in the world. It's a huge light up kind of passion. And like I said, I didn't put it all together until about 10 years ago when I was doing a sort of a search for, well, what is my purpose? And somebody asked me the question, well, what's the thing when you look back over your life that's a consistent theme over and over? And when I did that, that light bulb went on, and I even remembered sitting in that first grade class doing those explanations and going, oh, well, that's it. Now I get it.
And that's amazing.
But the problem, it was tremendous. But, you know, there isn't a marketing slogan that says, I help people get unstuck. People are like, well, what do you mean? So languaging around it has been a little interesting, but the energy of it, the really amazing, juicy energy of it is when people walk in, do a session with me, walk in to see me, or I walk into their companies, and there's this sort of this hangdog, closed, head down, frustrated, stuck kind of energy. And we work together, sometimes just for a single session, a very short period of time. And all of a sudden, they're open, and they're expansive, and they're in flow, and they're excited, and they're lit up. And that's just, that's my passion. It's what fires me up.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, Karen, why don't you jump in here and tell us about you?
Well, I'd be happy to, and I think we're going to definitely see some overlapping themes, which is no accident, right?
Well, the interesting thing is, usually I try to get, with all of you who are being interviewed here, I try to get people who have a different focus than each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the two of you just kind of came together, and I said, well, okay, it's all as it's supposed to be.
Well, and sometimes this might be different topic focus, but a lot of commonality in our kind of context or point of view. So my background is my life theme is all about integration, the darkness and the light, the masculine and the feminine, the spiritual and the financial, that my whole life has been a journey about taking things that seem to be opposites and seeing how they come together. And I grew up on the East Coast of the United States in the oldest of three kids. And my dad is first generation Italian American, and he was the first in his family to do any kind of education or schooling. And my mom is the daughter of an Irish school teacher. That's you know, her dad, and then a Jewish nurse, her mom. And then my mom became a teacher and her sister became a nurse, you know, so you kind of, y'all are kind of catching my family background.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And I was the oldest of the three kids and definitely the little responsible one. And when the other girls were playing dolls, I was playing school. So I think I came out of the womb pointing at a little flip chart, you know, that's my, the teacher archetype, which is why I was relating to Kathy. Yeah. And I would say that as a child growing up in my family, there was a very ethical approach to work, education, and money. So those things were very positively correlated. And so I learned that my parents worked and then they had money and we paid taxes to the government and that's how we got to go to the library. And we learned that school was our job, and it just all seemed, it seemed fair and logical and made sense. Now, whether people are listening and either agreeing with it or not agreeing with it, I think it's always nice to kind of go like, that's the, it just gives you a context.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very positive modeling. But then I had huge challenges as a teen and a young adult, and this is probably, Jan, a whole other conversation, but I was forced to my knees through addiction and substances and other other challenges so that there was no choice. Even though I was a good girl by day and doing well in school, I was definitely a bad girl by night and had a lot of shame and remorse. And then I had stories to back up my shame and remorse. And mm-hmm. I ended up having to find the power greater than myself and have a real surrender.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people can relate. And that's what got me started on a spiritual path. And then by the time I was in my 20s, I really had, you know, both things going on. I had this kind of recovery, spiritual awakening that was happening while I was also still competent and doing well in school and business and all of that. And you kind of fast forward into the next couple of decades, I maintained a corporate training in banking and competency life, and I had this spiritual exploration life, and in the last 10 years or so, I have explicitly put those things together. So, you know, here's, so my life is, out of my deepest darkness came my greatest joy, the discovery of the divine, and then, yeah, and then out of the you know, financial and business and money life, I really was interested, and this is where I can, you know, created the Money Keys book and message about 5 or 6 years ago, because I saw so many people suffering about how do you have a spiritual awakening and have financial competency and success. And so that's my passion today, is to help people, and particularly it's often women who have a desire and a passion to contribute to life, is really helping people put together the spiritual and the financial.
That is, I think, one of the biggest challenges that women in particular have. I don't know that men have such a big problem with it, because they grow up being with an understanding that they tend to be more financially aware, and women are supposed to be the little woman, you know, in the kitchen and not worrying about the bills type of a thing. And I realize that's an old-fashioned image now, but it seems that even in today's world that women, girls and women, don't have a very good financial understanding, like both of you seem to have, Kathy, you and Karen, to make it in today's world, especially when they have some sort of a spiritual type of a business. So I want to ask both of you, I mean, Kathy, you kind of talked about how you did it from kindergarten on, but, and Karen, how did you put it together? How did you put the quote-unquote hard financial world with the softer spiritual world? How did you merge those and put them together?
Well, I would say the way that those things came together for me is that I really had to look to how to practice the principles that I was studying and learning spiritually. So the principles, for example, of oneness, the principle of oneness or unity, the idea that we're all connected, is like, am I going to really live that, or am I just going to flap my gums and say it's true? I mean, if it's really true, right, then my romantic life is divinely ordered. Then my financial life is an expression of God. You know, then the body temple is a place to reveal the divine. And when there's challenges, it doesn't mean something's wrong. Challenges mean it's an opportunity for the divine, God, spirit to express. So I almost came at it. I mean, I got there through cognition and then into experience. I had to say, if this is true, then what would it be in this area of life? And I think I've just been blessed, and partly what people are hearing, you know, as you're listening to a conversation like this, everybody just knows you're hearing our words, but you're also catching a vibration. Mm-hmm. And part of the vibration that I bring is I'm God positive and I'm money positive. I had always felt money was part of the divine design. And I'll give a practical tip here, which is if there's anywhere in your life where the material world, it shows up for you and you know it's God in action. So, for example, if you can look into the eyes of a child and see the divine, or you believe the beautiful, you know, earth is a place where God shows up, or, you know, art or poetry, or some people will see it with the beloved or with the animal kingdom. If you can find the divine in any material area, then girlfriend, boyfriend, you can do it with your money. So sometimes it's good to just benchmark ourselves.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I'll have to play with that. I think for me, one of the biggest lessons, I'm not sure that's the right word, but one of the things that helps me the most is when I can play with a concept and not get so deadly serious about it, because it changes the whole atmosphere, the whole attitude or something. So I'm going to start looking for God in whatever I get, and then how can I bring that into do the same thing with money?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, Kathy, tell us how you brought it together, the whole financial, you're being able to tutor and to learn that with the spiritual.
Well, it's interesting because in a couple of ways I'm very like Karen in that I spent my career, I still hold the CPA license. I was worked for a big public accounting firm. I did international consulting in the whole left brain numbers dominant arena. And at the same time, I was having this spiritual practice, this teaching and evolution and personal growth and shared growth and transformational experiences, having them myself and holding them for other people. And so I really had separated them. It was like the left side and the right side of my brain weren't talking to each other. One was where I made my money, and the other one was where I did my spiritual work. Hmm. And I looked at it as, and I think I talked about this in my topic, but as the marriage of meaning and money.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had to look at how do these two things come together. And the first place I looked was, okay, can I bring my meaningful practice, what's spiritually meaningful to me, into my corporate life? Could I live a spiritual life within that venue? And the answer for me ultimately was no. It was the venue I was in, I could not bring that to bear. It was my value set was too out of alignment. And it took me a while to figure that out. So that was sort of my leap into my own business. But what it really comes down to is if you want a healthy marriage of meaning and money, both components need to be healthy.
Mm.
You know, and so I agree with Karen about your relationship to money. I mean, if you really think about it, money is pieces of paper, okay, printed by the federal government. And the whole purpose of money to begin with was to facilitate exchange of value.
Yeah,
it didn't
communication.
If you went to market with a chicken and you wanted a horse, you had to bring a whole bunch of chickens, all right? And this was not an exact, you couldn't exactly expand your growth in your trade way back in the day if you had to cart your chickens all over to go find your horse. So what happened was money evolved as a way of facilitating exchange. It's really about flow. And when we hang on to it, when we get fear-based, when we grasp it and go, oh, somehow it's a measure of my self-worth, or, ooh, money is the root of all evil, or, you know, some of the other things that we hear growing up and that we've internalized as messages, now all of a sudden these pieces of paper are burden bearers. They carry all this context with them that is loaded as far as, can I put money together with meaning? I just had a conversation last week with a woman who said that, well, when I charge for my spiritual practice, my spirituality is dimmed.
Oh, God.
I know a number. Yeah, I know.
Ooh,
I know a number. Yeah,
right.
I know a number of
times.
People like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the context they hold for money, because money is just a means, it's a flow, it's an exchange. When we get healthy about our relationship to money, we have half that equation. The other half is to get healthy about our meaning. Are we serving from a place of conditional acceptance? Are we trying to do something from a place that says, I need to do this so people will like me, or I need to do this so that I feel useful? There's a lovely quote, short one, by Dr. Rachel Naomi Raymond that said that helping, fixing, and serving represents three different ways of seeing life. When you help, you see life as weak. When you fix, you see life as broken. But when you serve, you see life as whole. And that
nice.
When, and I found this out myself when I was trying to fix companies that I had worked for because I perceived them as broken. Well, guess what? They weren't very receptive to that. They're like, nah, we're not broken, kind of thing. And I had to get healthy about my own meaning and my own desire to serve in order to create a healthy marriage between meaning and money. So that was, you really, for me, it was about working on both components and mm-hmm. healing myself so that I could stand in that place and then create that opportunity for others.
Now, you talk about money traps that keep people anxious and angry and overwhelmed about money. Would
yeah.
you address that? I mean, it seems like it leads right in here.
It does. It definitely does, and it really builds on what Kathy was talking about. You know, I the way that I sometimes language it is that money doesn't really have power over us. The meaning we make about money has the power, and you and I, we are the meaning makers. So that just even for everyone who's considering what's my relationship with money and how to make it healthy is to realize the power we do have, which is, we're the ones who look at the papers and the digits and decide it's a lot or it's a little, it's a tragedy or it's a comedy. So that just that empowerment is such a great place to start. And then, and I'm going to be so interested, Kathy, to how you relate to it. The way that I've seen, you see, the problem really is that for most people, without deliberately developing three areas, most people will just replicate the financial modeling and experience of the past.
Oh, yeah, and what they learned as kids.
Exactly, and that is great if what you learned in the past is what you want. You're wonderful. And then for most people who are listening to Jan's blog talk radio here, most of the folks who are listening are going to have an aspiration for something greater, not so much to get more stuff, but to reveal and serve more in the way they want to serve. And so what I've discovered is that people often are blocked, and even just understanding that the blocks come in three different areas can really help. And I call these three things the money traps. And the money traps are in three areas. Our spirituality about money, and if you look up and you think about how are we connected to the divine around money, and then our beliefs about money, and you could almost put your hands on your solar plexus, it's our thought, emotion, and conversation about ourselves, money, and the world. And then it's our habits, our consistent behaviors and actions, and I'm wiggling my fingers and toes here, our habits with money. And in each of those areas, there's a trap, and then there's a corresponding like key or law of success. So shall I just go through all three?
Yeah.
And maybe what I'll do is I'll go through each one, and then we'll have a little conversation about how we see it showing up. So, yeah. So the first one, the trap in the area of spirituality, is the trap of scarcity. And scarcity is the clinging miser card thing. It's the anxiety-ridden idea that there's not enough. You know, it's lack. And whenever we're in scarcity, we're usually future-focused because most of the people listening to this right now are first-world people with problems like, you know, my internet signal is not as good as I want it to be. You know, so most of us are not, where our problems are not actual life-threatening problems. There's a billion people on planet Earth who tonight, the question is, you know, where will they sleep and will they have clean water and will their kids make it? You know, so
right.
I don't mean to minimize fears, but often our fears are about what might not be there in the future. I mean, we're literally like out of our minds when we're afraid. And the thing that's awful about scarcity is it really separates us from the truth, from the divine. And when we're in scarcity, we really suffer. And we're often kind of frozen when we're fearful or we're frantic. And it can seem like what I need is more. But what really, the trap of scarcity is a call for the spiritual principle of unity. And that's that oneness, that interconnectedness of all life, where we start to realize that we're made in the image and likeness of the divine, and we start to be really in touch with this idea that you know, the kingdom of heaven is within, and, you know, the Hindu would say, thou art that, or in the Jewish tradition, the man would fall from heaven. It's the idea that that all that the Mother, Father, God, Creator, Principle has is already ours. And to connect with that, to be in the principle of unity, brings us peace about money, no matter how much we have.
All right. That's
the,
great.
I think that a bridge that I see helping people to get to that place of oneness is focusing on shifting their focus from what they don't have to what they do and being grateful for that. One of the abundant things that I don't ever hear anybody saying thank you for, but I say thank you for every day, is sufficient air. Air is abundant, and if I didn't have air, I would be here for a matter of moments before I would be dead. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that, you know, in terms of abundance and providing for is that there's air. I can be grateful that I woke up in the morning, kind of thing. I can actually, one of my favorite being grateful for is toothbrush and minty fresh toothpaste, because I know how my teeth feel when I don't brush them. It's gross. So I mean, you know, it when you start thinking about all the things that you do have, there isn't as much space within you to be in that fear and scarcity model, and you start expanding, getting back into that expansion place where you start to feel that connection and that support and being provided for that allows people to step into oneness, in my experience.
Yeah.
So I love gratitude as a practice, and I love encouraging people to be creative about what they haven't thought yet to be grateful for, like air, like in a first world mm-hmm. country, being able to go to the tap and get a glass of water that's actually not going to make you sick. Things
right.
like that. It's
yeah.
It's truly an amazing practice.
Yeah,
I find myself
I find myself being
grateful for a roof over my head, and not
mm-hmm.
because I need a house, but because right now I'm in Arizona. This heat is kicking me to the curb. So number one, being having protection from the sun. Number two, having air conditioning available, or in the winter when you're in a cold atmosphere, having heat. These things are they're very rudimentary in a way. But I find myself being so incredibly grateful, just those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Gratitude is a spiritual practice, and that's what, you know, for people who are like, well, what can I do? Well, what you can do to be more in unity is to engage in practices just like the gratitude practices that Kathy and
mm-hmm.
Jan are talking about. Like that's the what to do to have more of a feeling of unity. And when we have more of a feeling of unity, then we're in peace. So that's exactly the way to go. Yeah. Well, this is fun.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
well,
you guys, go ahead.
I'm ready to move on to the next. It's kind of funky.
Okay.
See how they flow, but is this good? So I'll go ahead and talk about
Please.
The next
yeah,
graph.
Go ahead.
It's kind of fun to have us work through these together. Yeah. So the next trap, the next area, is our beliefs about money. And beliefs is a combination of our thought, which is the content that goes through, and then it's our emotional reaction to the content, and then held in place by our conversations and our, you know, repetition and intensity. Those are the things that create a sense of belief. And so the trap is superstition. Superstition, I call it the jail of our money past. And this is the idea, the mistaken idea, that somebody or something outside of us is controlling our money life. And when we're in superstition, we suffer with resentment and guilt and shame about our own decisions, but also anger and upset about what others have done or not done. And the thing that's just awful about superstition is that it stifles our creativity, and it always keeps us at the effect of people, places, and things. So the key to get out of it, you can really feel like, well, if only the government, spouse, the businesses, the corporation, the media, the clients, competitors, it can seem like if only they would be different, then I would be rich, free, and happy. But that is not what Jan has – this is not the Change Other People show.
Right.
Yeah, this is the spiritual trailblazing and empowerment show. So the key for superstition, it's the law of co-creation or the law of attraction or the laws of cause and effect. It's the idea that as we are to life, life is to us. And this is the principle that our consciousness creates our experience, which means when we start to say, you know, gee, I wish, rather than saying, I wish I had more collaborative relationships in my business, is you start to say, I am a collaborator. I'm generous with my time and energy. I'm always looking for creative opportunities to serve others, and that's what comes back to me. And what I find is kind of ironic about this area is the place to start, if you're in a lot of anger and resentment, is to start with financial forgiveness, to forgive something from the past, particularly something you either did or didn't do, or, you know, you either acquiesce to or allowed, or, you know, so forgive something from your past, and that's the best way to get into the freedom that comes when you're in really, really in the flow.
Wow. I have to go way back, because when my father died when I was just, this is Jan, my father died when I was just a little kid, and my mother, as the eldest, I became my mother's confidant in our financial status, and really it was lack of finances, because we were on aid to dependent children, which is welfare. And she was, I don't know if she was like that, but she really bought into that. And as a little kid, I was a good student. Mm. Plus, I had the privilege, if you will, of being her confidant. So I think I have to go back and forgive myself for buying into my mother's lack mentality.
Yeah, it even sounds like to have such gentleness and compassion for that child who was really, see, forgiveness is like releasing the judgment. That child was doing exactly the right thing at the right time, was, you know, emotionally being there for mother and somehow finding the way to relate in a time that was so confusing. You know, to have a, like, compassion is such a big part of forgiveness. Oh,
that's a good
point. Yeah.
One of the other things I find, particularly when you're dealing with messages from childhood, is that at one level you internalize those as you love the parent, and it's how you belong, and it's how you connect. So it can be very difficult to go back and shift that without shifting a sense for how you belong to the family. For example, people who can't make more money or haven't been able to make more money or can't earn a lot of money because the message in their family was that money is not a good thing or that money is scarce. Well, at a very profound level, their sense of belonging is tied into that truth, because that was the truth for our family. And then if they violate that sense of belonging, all of a sudden there's a bigger issue at stake, like, wait a minute, I don't belong anymore. Who am I and how am I in the world? Because I'm trying to shift this belief, but that's how our family was. And there's a change in perspective that you can get to look with an adult's eyes, just like Karen, you so beautifully reflected to Jan, and Jan, you reflected back around seeing that from a new perspective and not being judgmental of it, but allowing it to come from a deep place of compassion and still understanding that the belonging is there, but it's not defined by that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. There was a couple of years ago, my mother died in 2009, and a couple of years ago, I did a show here, and we did a visualization of taking people down through the root chakra, and there was a door, you know, and there's going to be someone on the other side of the door who has a message for you. And so I took everybody through that, and I thought, well, you know, I haven't done that in a long time myself, so I did it later that afternoon after the radio show. And what I found on the other side of that door was my own higher self and the word empowerment. This is something that I have done with other people. I empower other people. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. And that night I went to bed and I was just kind of thinking about that in my head. And all of a sudden I heard my mother's voice as clear as could be. And she said, well, I'm out of here. My job's done now. And I looked all around and I said, what? And I realized it had to do with this whole empowerment thing. And I had to look back and say, because my mother and I were never friends. So how did this empowerment come about? And I realized that if it wasn't for her and the relationship or non-relationship that we had, I would not have turned out as I did, as this person who empowers myself and others. So it's what you said, Karen, too, about the compassion, going backwards with compassion to whatever that situation was, and recognizing of how we belong or don't belong in a particular family.
So what's the third? And the other thing I would say for people who are listening and thinking, like, well, what's the tip in this area or where do I start? I would encourage folks to realize, like, just hearing Jan, who's been on this path for decades, as you said earlier, that you would still be working on it is very normal. So one of the other things that I think is important is that, you know, I work with people in an ongoing community. Like, that's how people mostly work with me, is they join our Money Keys membership community, and we have wealth rituals we do each week, and we have monthly calls, and we stay connected that way. And sometimes people will be a little bit almost surprised that you can't just, like, you know, go through a workshop and then boom, all this stuff is handled and done forever. Now, that could absolutely happen. And what I've noticed is that most people, it's a process. And it keeps going, particularly in the beliefs area. Because beliefs, it's like the thing you said about working with the ego, is that beliefs are something that we continue to work with and evolve with. And so don't be upset if you'll find that you're working with a belief like, you know, that very important role with mother and the money. That may be something you're working with as your life goes on. So, all right. Let's talk about the third area. So for all of us, and I know, Kathy, I'm sure when you turn the light on in people's eyes, sometimes you have to tell them to get off the couch and get into action, right?
I talk about that as the, actually, I call it my vehicle for change, the form, the fuel, the focus, and the flow. And the flow is about stepping on the gas. And so you got to step on the gas and go.
That's the area of the habit. So habits are our consistent behaviors with money. And the way that I like to think about habits are the trap in this area is the trap of survival mode. And you can think of it like financial quicksand. It's the overwhelm with money and systems and tracking and information. And often, no matter how much we have, if someone's in survival mode, they'll always feel this sense of kind of struggling or busyness without really being effective. And it can feel very draining. It can feel like our energy is being dissipated. And sometimes we'll think when we're in survival mode, you know, and the way you would know it is if you have commingled personal and business stuff, if no matter how much you make, you always end up with the exact same spot. It's the sense of you're never quite reconciled or up to date with payroll if you own a business or your tax obligations or that type of thing. It's that always that messiness. And for many people, excuse me, it can seem like the way to get out of survival mode is just to get more money. And while more money is certainly a good thing, more money doesn't necessarily create order. So the law here is the law of circulation, which is the flow piece. It's the all of life is giving and receiving. All of life is graciously receiving the 100% that comes to us. Having an inspired money management system, that's one of the tools in this area. And then being in the place with a spiritually inspired money management system is to begin as a generous giver as well. And so one of the ways to get yourself into order with the law of circulation is to give your attention to your financial flows and to have a money management system that begins with giving, or I would use the word tithing, which is a tithe means a tenth. And it's a very traditional spiritual practice to give thanks for the 100% that comes to you and then leave a percentage behind or give 10% to people, institutions, and causes that really inspire you. And so that's one of the ways to get into the sense of flow and order with money. But when you're a giver and a receiver, you get out of that hoarding, miserly castle thing. You get into the flow, and then what happens is just it's not that God's been withholding from you, but it's just natural. If you're more vital, more energy can flow through. If you've got a financial system that's more orderly, there's capacity for more.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kathy, you said you had four different things flow. Would you tell us what those are again?
When you work with people? For change?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I back up one, though, and comment on what Karen just said?
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay, thanks. I'll get to that in a minute. But the thing that I see most frequently is women are great givers, and they are terrible at receiving.
Mm.
It's like they give, and they give, and they give, and they give.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
when somebody tries to give them something, even a compliment, they can be very uncomfortable. And I myself am still, I struggle with that receiving piece. I'm a great giver, but not so great a receiver sometimes. And in order for the universe to balance with you, giving and receiving are part of the flow. I totally agree with what Karen's saying on that. And so one of the silly little practices, maybe not so silly, that I recently started was, you know, people that stand on street corners and they're paid to hand out flyers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they got to stand there until all their flyers are handed out. And I always walk by them and never take one. I thought, why? Yeah, this is their job. They're being paid to stand there. They have to stand there until all these things are handed out. Why can't I just smile and accept it and say thank you?
Right.
So it's a little bitty practice in opening that wall about receiving. And the other piece that helps with the balance of giving and receiving is when we give so much, the people that we give to are ultimately not served as well as if there's balance.
Yeah.
And that's, think of it like somebody showed up to your house with a beautiful gift that you were completely not expecting. How do you feel? Well, first of all, you want to run out and buy them something or whatever, but you feel that out of balance that they brought you something beautiful and you don't have anything for them.
Right.
So that's what happens when we give our gifts without being open to receive in exchange for that. Because the
mm-hmm.
people on the other side then get uncomfortable and out of balance. And they either can't fully integrate what it is that you're offering, or they move away, or they behave in a way that you're going, what are they doing? They're trying to rebalance that giving and receiving flow.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I think, Karen, what you said was beautiful, and I just wanted to make sure that that imbalance to giving that I see in so many women, including myself, was also, we brought it forward and talked about it a little.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many ways to be able to practice that the giving and receiving. I mean, you talked about taking a flyer from someone who's paid to hand out flyers. I love driving down the street and seeing somebody waving a sign. You know they're paid $5 an hour or minimum wage or whatever to stand out there and wave that sign no matter what the weather is. And they've chosen to do that. And the best thing, one of the best things I can do for them is honk my horn and wave and say, I see you. It's just an acknowledgement of I'm receiving what you're giving.
Yes. And it keeps us in flow so that we're more open to receiving so that the flow that is money also comes to us.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's kind of what I was heading for when I was asking you about the flow. But you said that there were, you gave like four names. So I remember form and I remember flow.
I teach a class on how to transform your life. And it's called 4 Weeks to Transform Your Life. And the first session is about resistance. Because anytime you decide that you want to make a change in your life, you come up against all these resistances. And so that class is about how do you identify resistance and then how do you move through that resistance when it comes up. The second class, which is the one I had mentioned earlier, is something I call creating your vehicle for change. The form, the fuel, the focus, and the flow. And the form is more or less the plan. It's kind of like, do you need a car or a rocket ship or a bicycle, depending on what it is that you want to do. If you think about transformation, it's also a form of transportation from where you are to where you want to be. And then the fuel is what drives you to do it, what's your passion. And if it's a long journey that you're going to be on, how are you going to refuel along the way? How are you going to keep your passion up for that to happen? The third part is the focus. Have you set a goal that you can achieve, that's measurable, that you understand? In other words, have you programmed the GPS? Because if you don't know where you're going, then any direction will do, and you may not get to where you want to go. And then the last one is the flow, which is, I mentioned earlier about, okay, you got the GPS programmed, you're all fueled up, you know you're in your vehicle, you know the framework and the plan for it, and now you step on the gas or light the rocket boosters or start that first pedal or take the first step, whatever it is, but you get into motion. And then the other two classes are the three phases of change in terms of once you're on the journey, the three different stages you're going to go through and how not to get stuck in any one particular phase. And the last part, of course, is we all benefit from support. So have you got the right support systems in place to help you along the way?
All right. So where do you find, I'm going to ask each of you this, where do you find that people get stuck the most when it comes, well, and we're dealing with both money and spirituality here, so let's just keep it in that realm. Where do people get stuck, or where does it seem like most people get stuck, or is there a most?
Kathy, you start.
Oh, okay. Wow. I'm not certain there's a most because everybody has their own particular sticking point, but relative to money, because a lot of my clients are women, it's valuing themselves appropriately.
Okay.
It's that whole imbalance of giving and receiving, and they haven't really internalized the value of what it is that they offer to the world. Probably because something as profoundly important as childbearing and rearing doesn't get paid. You know, it's that non-compensated economy that we all have part of in the world. So there's a sticking point in charging a fair price. And the turnaround on that one for people is, okay, if you say you can do this, you know, some amazing thing, and you're charging $50 for it, I'm probably not going to believe you, because if you really could do ABC amazing thing, it would cost a lot more than $50. So there's a credibility factor that comes with aligning what they charge with what they're offering. And that's the first stuck place, is that sense of self-worth and the pricing piece that happens in money. and the spirituality side of it, where I see them being most stuck, is what Karen mentioned so beautifully initially, was the what I call the baggage that money has in a spiritual context. That
right.
Somehow people look at it as, you know, people who are rich are somehow bad or greedy or whatever. And if you have all that labeling going on, then how can you ever be rich? Because then you would be bad and greedy and all these other negative things. So it's if you want to be a good person, you're not necessarily going to be a rich person. So it's disconnecting that type of message from the spiritual side so that money is free to be part of the flow of abundance from the divine.
So well, that message, unfortunately. Okay. That message, unfortunately, comes right from the Bible. It's that whole, it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter into heaven or whatever, along with the money.
I can fix that. That's a concept. I studied with a biblical scholar on that kind of stuff. The eye of the needle, it was a gate into Jerusalem that was so narrow that the camels had to have their burdens taken off them in order to pass through the gate. So it did not say that the rich man cannot enter heaven. It said that he has to let go of his burdens of stuff in order to pass through the gate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Is that cool or what?
That is. That's awesome.
I loved it when I learned that because it put a whole different context into that particular piece that I agree with you is used to beat people up about money and being rich, when in reality it's just about not to be attached to the stuff.
Yeah.
But to be to be clear about the journey and the destination.
And I'll add to that the New Testament scripture, you know, it's not money is the root of all evil. It's not even love of money directly is the root of all evil. It's when the love of money prevents us from our connection with the Father, you know, with God. That's when
right.
it becomes the separation.
Yep.
Yeah,
love
yeah,
it.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's and this and I would say with this kind of so I'll just say this completely dovetails with I would say where people get most stuck spiritually. I would say people are most stuck in a subtle way with what do they really believe about God, about spirit, about the nature of the divine. So for many people who would call themselves a spiritual person, their attitude, understanding, cosmology, belief system about the nature of God still may be stuck in subtle ways in a sense of either separation or a sky god that is giving approval or disapproval based on our behavior. And I, mm-hmm. when there's that going on, people will feel, I've been bad, therefore I'm cut off, therefore I'm separate, therefore I don't have, therefore I'm in want, therefore I'm suffering, I need to take from others, or something's wrong with me. Like, sometimes it's literally, what are we really believing about God? Or we're saying, I believe in the law of attraction, but I'm always upset because I think the universe might be teaching me a lesson. And what I would say, look, get right with God, get right with the divine. Really, so spiritually, spend time in your own, the quiet of your own soul, in your own deep practice to really feel and breathe and know and connect with, and what I would encourage you to discover is the loving, eternal, infinite, ever-giving nature of who you are, who you'll always be. And when you know that, then you'll navigate through, you know, my lover did this, businesses are doing that, I have this in the body, a problem with the kids, there's floods, there's fires, there's locusts, there's whatever. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The human condition's got, you know, we've got our ups and downs, right? But when you have that spiritual connection, then you have a way to navigate it. So the stuck place is our spirituality deserves a deeper and deeper attention. And that will also help with this idea of worthiness that Kathy was talking about, is when we truly understand we're made in the image and likeness of an infinite, loving, creative, divine, mother, father, God source, then it becomes serving that idea to be the best that we can be. You know, it's not, so people will sometimes, when, you know, when I'm given a compliment, I'll say as gracious a thank you as I can, and I'll really know, thank you. This is, you know, this is God in me showing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so it's just that those come together. And
yeah.
then I'm going to say my other stuck area, and you ladies will push back if you think there's some pushback, but here's what I'm just going to say, girlfriend to girlfriend to girlfriend here. Okay, here it comes.
And all right.
I notice that sometimes people are in a little bit of what I would call financial fantasy. And it's not the good kind of fantasy. I'm talking about good old classic magical thinking, which is my life will change while I stay the same.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this mm-hmm. is, you know, people get stuck, and it's not because they're bad, but it's because in a little bit our whole, like, spiritual teaching, personal growth, coaching kind of world is a little bit in this, like, if you just do this thing, it's fast, easy, and quick to magically have, you know, different mm-hmm. life experience. And I don't want to ever say that that's not possible. You know, absolutely, you know, there are things like that happening all the time in terms of, is it possible? But for most people, if you want to be a better, more powerful leader of your wealth, it means you have to be more peaceful, more inspired, more deeply connected to your value. You have to have a money management system that's more excellent, that's going to require you need to invest your time, money, and energy, your resources, and your attention in becoming more of who you're meant to be in order to have a different experience. So tell me if I am being too harsh here, ladies, but that's what I notice.
The line that I use is, if you always do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always got.
Always. Right. That whole definition of insanity. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I have a question for you both. You've got somebody who, Kathy, you brought this up, that somebody who says that they have certain qualifications and they need to charge more than the $50 that they've said they're going to charge. So they say, okay, I'm going to name my price what I feel is correct value. However, what if people aren't willing? What if people say, well, I can't afford it? So how do you deal with that? Not dealing with the people who can't afford it, but how do you deal with that attitude within a person that says, I can't charge more because people can't afford it? It isn't that I don't have value. It's other people can't afford it. How do you deal with that?
Well, I look at that in two ways. One way is to say, why are you marketing to people who can't afford you? Because there are people who can afford
mm-hmm.
you. And what you've done is you've surrounded yourself with that scarcity mentality, which then reinforces your underlying belief in scarcity. Because, well, look, I raise my prices and nobody can afford me. Instead of saying, well, I raise my prices, how do I find the people who really need what it is that I have to offer? And part of that is the value proposition. You know, when you basically find the people who really need what you have to offer, that when they perceive the value of that, and I'll give a classic example, they will find a way to pay. I was in a training go total names here, but she was marketing a year-long program for like $10,000, and it was a free ticket to get into the program, and there was a homeless guy. Somebody had given him a free ticket, and nobody sat near him because, you know, that's just the nature of being homeless. You don't get to bathe a lot, and he sat there, drank in the whole three-day program, and then went to the back when she sold the $10,000 program and said, how can I make arrangements to do this? And they set up a payment program with him whereby he had to contribute so many dollars every single week for the duration of the year, and that if he missed a payment, you know, he was out. This wasn't going to happen. But that if he did that, he would they'd let him in the program. It was a non-standard payment plan, obviously. He was so passionate that he wanted to create opportunities for orphans in Southeast Asia. He wanted to help them. That was his driving purpose in life, that he actually made that work.
Wow.
He went out, he found ways to make money legitimately. Ultimately, he got himself a home, he got cleaned up, and he started a foundation to help orphans in Southeast Asia.
How awesome.
All by following this process. And he was homeless. So anybody who says that they cannot pay because they don't have the money, just don't have a strong enough purpose for purchasing the value that you're talking about. So if you've made your value strong, if you've made the value proposition clear to them, then they may just not be the people that are there to work with you.
Yeah. You know, I'm a total agreement with energetically that idea. This, you know, sometimes what can happen then is there'll be a mix-up between spiritual principle and marketing and pricing strategies. So, you know, sometimes people will get the feeling, I've got a call to do this particular kind of, you know, hands-on healing work, let's say. And they'll feel, this is my call, I'm going to do what I love, the money should follow, you know, this is what I'm here to do. And what I've found is that if you really, truly, completely surrender, this is the work I am here to do, then you also have to surrender to the intelligence of the divine for how it might show up. Because it might show up that becomes like, you know, a gifted hobby type of work you do one day a week, and then, you know, you marry a beloved partner who, you know, and she's a day trader and she works it out, you know, pays all the bills. Or it might be that, you know, your healing work is what you're called to do and you're supposed to run a seven-figure healing center business. Like, I think sometimes people will not realize that it doesn't always mean that your particular funnel of products and services is going to turn out to be, you know, a bestseller, or you're going to have a 100,000-person easing list and all. Like, I think sometimes we conflate things, we pull together stuff that doesn't necessarily get put together, and that sense of, like, service and surrender and vision sometimes means, it does mean get a part-time job, honey, while you launch your thing, or it does mean count the money that comes from your family or your real estate or your whatever as part of your divine plan. Like, there's something, I think intellectually, don't be too small in your ideas. And Kathy, what do you think about that? I mean, do you see that as a theme with people?
I agree. People think that they lose focus on the what and they focus on the how. Well, the money's supposed to come from here.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to come from doing my business. And they aren't looking at all about the partner that you talk about that provides financing, or the windfall that comes in from a real estate sale, or they look at all these other sources of money. And I think that attaches back to how our baggage around money is that, well, if I'm doing a good job, then I'm supposed to be paid for that. That validates that I'm doing a good job, rather than I'm in service and the money is showing up for me to stay in service, however that manifests.
Yeah.
So, yes, I agree with that totally.
Yeah.
Also, it's why when I left corporate, before I left corporate, I asked myself, can I serve here? You know, can I do my spiritual work well in this environment? Because that was the thing I wanted to know first before I leaped out into, you know, trying a different model. And the answer came through clearly no. But it was the first question I asked. So, yes, I agree wholeheartedly. I also think you mentioned tithing before. I once worked with a consulting company where they wanted us to tithe our time. So for every 10 days of work that they paid us to do, we gave a day back so that they could take what was a very expensive service and offer it also to schools, to nonprofit organizations, to governmental entities. They had a really powerful process, and they wanted it to be able to offer it in a very affordable way to organizations, very deserving organizations that couldn't otherwise afford our time. So
isn't
we would be paid,
interesting.
And then we would tithe our time, and that was how they managed to roll it out into other very deserving organizations that couldn't otherwise afford the consulting prices that the for-profit industry was paying.
That sounds great. Well, I want to take a real quick interruption here and invite our listeners, if you have a question for Kathy or Karen, to call in. The number's 347 347-205-9074. Again, 347-205-9074. And you can ask your question or make your observation. So now I have another question for the two of you. This is something that Kathy wrote and said, every journey has its ups and downs. So I'd like to ask both of you to think about this and give me an answer. What do you think has been your biggest success and what would you consider to be your biggest challenge? And Karen, you're laughing, so you go first.
You know what I think my biggest success is that I have been comfortable with sharing this message about a spiritually inspired approach to money wherever God, Spirit, Life has invited me to share it. And I would say that what's been successful is that I genuinely open my heart and mind to see how will this fit with this particular group or situation. You know, I'll just be very open to like, and I've been invited to places like the real estate clubs, and I have been teaching for Laurel Langmire, who's a pretty hard-charging, you know, money wealth person, you know, pretty much on the marketing and business and cash flow type side of things. And I've also been at all the spiritual centers where everybody's fine with, you know, source, channel, all of these kind of things. But, you know, I've been well received in a lot of places. And I just think that the success of that comes from I really believe that everyone can find a value in connecting their faith with their finances. So that's been a success. And then I would say my biggest challenge is so some of you will already start to pray when I tell this story, is that in 2005, you know, I live here in beautiful Arizona, and I think it was 2005, I convinced my beloved partner, Bill, and I was like, we got to start buying real estate. So we bought two different residential real estate investment properties in Maricopa County in 2005, and if Jan hasn't already started to breathe deeply, she will now. So let's just put it this way. You know, we learned through the lesson of finding out, you know, that did not go as planned. But here's the thing. I learned so much about, like, God is still God, even if, you know, the property you buy for 200-something thousand gets sold in a short sale in 2011 mm-hmm. for 70. You know, it's
yep.
like, God's still God, I'm still good. And Bill and I actually became even more like intimate and connected and in partnership and in spiritual surrender around the whole thing. Because here's the thing, you know, we just did the next indicated thing. We never lied, but we also were savvy enough to hired a negotiator because that was a better thing to do than to have me getting huffy with the people at the banks and stuff, you know. So we just handled it. And I would say that Like the biggest – so what I want people to know is these principles work, but it doesn't always mean that every investment, you know, triples and quadruples, or that, you know, like it doesn't always mean that the outcome is what you would expect or desire, but the principles are always work. So that would be my two recent mm-hmm. successes and challenges.
Awesome. How about you, Kathy?
Well, the let's see. It's going to sound, I love the fact that Karen is, has got the, what I consider to be kind of like the big picture really funneled into the truth of what she offers. For me, my biggest success is going to sound really, really tiny, but it still moves me to tears to talk about it, is when I was in corporate and, trying to live a life whereby as a boss, I respected my people. I trusted them to do well. I got them the resources that they needed. I was operating by my own internal values and guidelines to behave in a way with my people that respected them no matter what. And I had 13 layers of people underneath me. And but I was, the company itself was just a very frustrating place to be. And I ultimately realized I couldn't be there. And I was leaving with a very heavy heart, feeling like I'd wasted a number of years of my life and, you know, okay, I'd save the company some money, but what had I really accomplished? And at my going away party, one of my clerks, we're talking, you know, high school graduate, GED, accounts payable clerk person, came up to me, and she'd worked for me for over a decade at that point. And she said, man, still getting all choked up. She said that I was the first person who had ever taught her that what she did was important and had value and was meaningful. Because if you don't get accounts payable right, you know, the company pays its money wrong. It was critically important what she did. And I knew that, and I had treated her in that way. And because I had taught her that, she was a third-generation single mom raising a daughter in that time frame and, you know, pretty much, you know, GED-level folk kind of thing. And her daughter had learned that from her and was going to go to college.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So I knew in that instance that all that time that I had spent in that organization being, you know, living my truth, but ultimately questioning whether it really made a difference. In that moment, her gift to me was a clear understanding of how lives are changed when we live our truth, even when we don't know it.
Right.
Because she could have never taken the time to speak up. And I would not have known that, and yet it still happened. So it's part of that, you know, like Karen's talking about, connecting to that oneness and being in that place, that our successes may not even be visible to us, but when we live from our truth, when we live from that place and act in accordance, that the impact that we have is far beyond what we'll ever truly know.
You know, I used to... go ahead, finish, Kathy. Sorry.
No, that's my biggest success. I was going to talk about my biggest challenge, but if you would like to talk about my biggest success right now, go for it.
No, go ahead with your challenge. That's great.
My challenge has always been fear. It's overcoming fear, not letting fear stop me, not getting stuck. I mean, there's a reason I help people get unstuck, which is I also work on my own unstuck process. That's why I'm an expert in it. But it's being caught up in fear and letting it slow me down or stop me. I believe that the world that we're in really pushes fear at us in many ways. Our news is often about fear. The messages are about scarcity and war and, you know, death and destruction. I mean, we are constantly bombarded with images and messages of fear. So my biggest challenge has been dealing with my own fears, not letting it stop me, but recognizing that it's going to come up. And that I just need to allow that to flow through me also and to just keep acting in spite of. And on last week's program, one of your speakers mentioned a very beautiful tendency of women when addressing challenges to, instead of fight or flight, to tend and befriend.
Right.
And I really took that to heart, and I I'm implementing more of that in my own life. And it's easing some of that fear also.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I decided many years ago that we all live our lives kind of like the story, It's a Wonderful Life. And you don't usually get to know or hear about the impact that your life, your words, your actions have on other people. And if you're really, really lucky, like, what was his name? George Bailey got to find out, he got to find out how some of what he, just his being alive, how it saved the lives of others, how it impacted other people. And this was a gift to me. This was probably what I consider my greatest success. I was teaching medical transcription to high school students, which was not the appropriate age group to be teaching it to, but nevertheless. This young woman was a senior in high school, and she was really active in the class, and then all of a sudden her grandmother died, and the girl disappeared from class. So I continued to call her, I spoke with her, encouraged her to come back to the class, and which she eventually did, and we went through until graduation. And at the graduation, this was a vocational school that people were going to, so at graduation, they you know, got up and got to talk about their instructors and all. And this young woman stood up and told, see, I'm going to do the same thing that you did, Kathy, is that it brings tears to me. She told the audience that I had literally saved her life. Because her grandmother was so important to her. And that when she died, that this young lady didn't know what to do. Her life was thrown into despair. And that the only, apparently there wasn't a good enough connection with her parents and the rest of her family. So my reaching out to a stranger to say, you have value, you have worth, you deserve not only to be alive, but to be alive and to prosper. And she came back to the class and was able to go on from there. That was so amazing to me. I've always felt like that was that one time where I got to see how my existence impacted somebody else, and that has been one of my greatest gifts. And my greatest challenge also is always that fear and uncertainty, which is why my signature byline for decades now has been, what would you attempt to do if you knew you couldn't fail? Because it doesn't matter what other people think. It's a goad to me. What are you're starting some new project or some new thing in your life. Are you going to let fear stop you? Or are you going to assume that you cannot fail? You're going to know with every cell of your being, you cannot fail, and go for it. So that's how I work with that fear part of it. Okay.
Well, you know, Jan, I wanted to make sure that we did share our how people can kind of take the next step, because I'm feeling like that would be useful before we – I know we're going to start to wrap things up in a bit. Is it okay if I let people know
something?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, we covered the at a very high level the three different money traps, the trap of scarcity, superstition, and survival mode. And what I find is people, as a follow-up, like to be able to read the book chapter and hear the very good 26-minute audio guide we have for, we call it Escaping the Money Traps of Scarcity, Superstition, and Survival Mode. And you can get that bonus at themoneykeys.com, themoneykeys.com, themoneykeys.com. And you enter your information, and you'll click a couple of links, check your email inbox, and you'll go to a download page. And then you'll be part of our email family. And my feeling is, these days, with how busy people are, I serve you twice a month with tools and techniques and stories and tips. And we don't stalk you with email. We try to keep it always high value. And we love for people, if you found this conversation to be helpful, we'd love to stay connected. And the other place for me is, I love Facebook. I have a Facebook community fan page called Karen Russo, Your Spiritual Guide in Wealth, and I check that all the time. So if you've got a question or a comment, or you've been part of the conversation in your group conversation, you want to take it further, that's the best way to stay connected with me.
All right. Kathy, how about you?
My website is yourbigbreakthroughcoach.com, and I have a couple of entertaining little videos on there for people to where I talk about fear, and I also talk about being a breakthrough coach. There is a contact us link on there that you can reach out and ask questions or let me know what's going on. That four-week class that I offered, I have I have recordings of that. And if people have a particular interest in one of those topics, they can get one of those recordings as a bonus, as no cost, for an interest, something to help them move themselves forward on the path of transformation. But the best way to reach me is just either through contacting me through the website, or by phone, actually. I live in San Francisco, so please don't call me at 5 o'clock in the morning, which is 8 o'clock your time. But other than that, I like talking to people. I like being in front of groups and talking to people individually. I kind of thrive on that connection. It's kind of where my gift comes up and is most applicable and most useful, is in those kinds of interactions. And I basically tell anybody, I'll send them a link, and they can talk to me, another bonus, for 30 minutes for no cost, and it's not a sales call. Like Karen, I don't stalk people. I don't push that. I talk about helping you make that next step. And I might make a recommendation once we identify the next step to say, I might be the right person to help you, but I might not be. I mean, there's a number of times where I do consultations and I refer people out to other resources because what they need isn't what I have to offer. It's what somebody else has to offer.
Comes back to choosing that right audience, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's also my stance with integrity. You know, I am definitely here to serve, and I do not want to try and work with people where I am not the best way for them to move forward. So I get very excited when I find really wonderful and confident and caring professionals like you, Karen, because that means that I have more people in my referral network so that when someone talks to me, I can say, you know what, you need this, and you need to talk to this person because they're really the next step for you to move you forward. So that's why I get all excited about that. So yourbigbreakthroughcoach.com. You can connect with me there. There's a number, there's an address, there's a connect box, and we can set up a time to talk, or you can request one of those recordings around resistance, creating your change vehicle, the three phases of change for support and why you need it to succeed.
All right, great. Well, I have, before we end, I have two more questions for both of you. So my first question is, if you've got somebody, for anybody who's starting out to pursue their purpose as their livelihood now, so maybe they're leaving a corporate world, maybe they're doing it in conjunction with it, what's the most important thing that they need to consider?
Karen saying, I say to people these days, circulate from the start. So immediately upon, like, you've got some kind of call, just do the very simple content marketing piece where it's like, what problem do people have that they know that it's a problem, it's important to them, and they're willing to invest time, money, and energy to solve it? What solution does the thing I have offer? Then get your first client or pilot group or test thing and ask for money to do it from the beginning. So just circulate from the start. And I'm saying that, I'm trying to picture it, say it all positive rather than say the second piece of it, which is don't spend, you know, five figures and 6 months trying to be in some, like at home, making it perfect and getting some kind of certification before you go out in the world and see if anybody is really interested in your thing. Circulate from the start. Be a receiver and a giver from the beginning.
Awesome. All right. Kathy, what about you?
I agree totally with everything Karen said, and I would add to that, I want to stress the perfection piece. Is my business coach has this wonderful saying that says, to every third grader, a fourth grader is a god. So all you have to be to start down the path is a few steps ahead of somebody like you that's a few steps behind, and you can help them along the way. And if you really think about that analogy, if you're busy perfecting and adding skills and training and developing, well, you're becoming a high schooler. But no third grader is going to reach out to an 11th grader for help because there's too big a gap in the ages and in the ability to understand and help people move forward. So if you aren't offering what it is that you have learned to the people who need to learn it, who need what you have to offer, and that are just shortly behind you on the path, you're actually doing them a disservice because they're looking for you and you're too busy trying to evolve your own self. You do evolve yourself as part of the process, but evolve it with people that you can help along the way would be my advice.
All right. I love that. Okay, so this may sound redundant, but I'll ask it anyway. What is the most important message that you'd like to take away from the conversation here today?
Go for it, Kathy.
I think that that for me, that we don't have to continue this culture. separates meaning and money, or spirituality and money. And that, you know, Karen's message from the start was about oneness, and mine was about the marriage of meaning and money. But it really comes down to that we are not separate from all that is. We are a part of it. And when we can understand and completely feel into that wholeness of ourselves as part of the world, you know, basically we can participate in that flow and in that abundance so that we don't think of ourselves as separate or isolated or apart, because that's when we fall into fear and closure and constriction and limitation, and then we wind up cutting ourselves off even further from that which would help us, support us, and move us forward into joy and abundance. And it's not magical thinking. There's effort that needs to be made, clearly, but we have to open to it. And it's that opening and that stepping into flow that I think is the most important thing to do.
All right. Karen, how about you?
The biggest idea that we've really been speaking from and to and about is that which we desire, we already have, we already are, and really the call and the practice of living in our purpose is to give it and share it and circulate it and express it. So that gives us like a high calling, but it reduces the scrambling and the yearning and the lack. So we really, it's like, be who you are, give your gifts. The world loves you and needs you. Yeah,
you.
That's what I...
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what have we not covered that you wanted to make sure that we did bring up today? Have we missed something from either one of you? Karen?
No. I feel complete.
No. Okay. Kathy?
I would like to add one thing.
Okay.
And that is, I said that if I had a wish for the world, it would be that everybody at some point in their life has an experience of what it feels like to be loved unconditionally. To really feel that, like, call it the divine, or in some sense, that greater wholeness that is part of us, that there is no part of us that is not love. No part of us. It's what Karen said at the start, that integration of light and dark. That light and dark is a false separation. It's the wholeness of who we are. Our dark places are often the power and the passion and the fuel from which we learn and then what we have to offer to people. So it's that unconditional place of knowing that all of us is love, loved, lovable. And so many people don't have that experience. And if I could engage in magical thinking and wave a magical wand, for somebody to stand in the presence of that and feel how incredible it is to be loved for the complete wholeness of everything that you are, that's the wish I would have for the world.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much. All right. I'd like to ask you both to give your contact information one more time. And it sounded like each of you had some sort of a gift to offer. So would you tell us that again? Karen, you said themoneykeys.com.
Yes, themoneykeys.com to get your book chapter and audio guide, Escaping the Money Traps. And the best place to chat with me is on Facebook at Karen Russo, Your Spiritual Guide in Wealth.
Okay. Kathy?
And my website is yourbigbreakthroughcoach.com. Lots of letters, but yourbigbreakthroughcoach.com. You can contact me there. Give my phone number and email contact information. And I, too, have an offer, actually two, one of which is a 30-minute consultation for just helping you with whatever stuck point you're on right now. And the alternative is one of the recordings of that 4 weeks to change your life. So just people
awesome.
Can reach
Thank
out
you.
And ask, and I'll make sure they get it.
Great. Your big breakthrough reminds me of the card, which is the big friend, breaking through from the fear of the dragon.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, and I want to remind everybody that you can contact me at jan@purposetalkradio.com. And on Facebook, we have the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group that you can join and join in those conversations as well. I want to remind you also that next Monday is July 1st, and it is the new global holiday called Positive News Day. It's actually going to be a whole month, but it's the beginning of that month. And Cindy Freeman, who is our facilitator, is going to be my guest that day. She's going to talk about how this came about and what it's all about. So I hope you will join us next Monday for that message as well. All right, Kathy and Karen, I want to thank you very much. This has been a delightful show. I've enjoyed your company very much. We do have a caller, last-minute caller. So let's see who this is and invite them in. Here we go. Hi, this is Jan. Who have we got on the line here?
Hi, Jan. My name's Lori. I'm sorry. I think I was just listening and I hit the button.
That's all right. Hi, Lori. Do you have a question for either of my guests or for myself?
I don't believe so. I'm sorry. Like I said, I was just listening.
Well, you keep right on listening. I'm glad you were called in to listen. So
great.
Enjoy the call. All right. Okay, everybody, that is our show today. And I want to thank you all for joining us. Remember that to go to truetrinity.com to be able to check out the song, I Am Who I Am, and you'll get to hear it again here in just a minute or two. Kathy and Karen, thank you very much again for joining me. It was great.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you both. Thank you, Cindy, too, everybody. Peace and blessings.
Thank you,
yeah,
and
thank
I wish you,
you
all.
Dan, thank you so much.
All right.
It's been awesome.
Okay, thank you. And I wish you all soul blessings, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.